Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing founder, a founder that is joining us and that has built it, scaled it, I mean, you name it. You know, they recently announced their latest round of financing. You know, they raised over $70 million, about 80 people, and they're riding this rocket ship. So again, we're going to be talking about their founding story, some really interesting stuff there, how he met his co-founders at school, also how they went about, you know, going, you know, raising their last round. It was a round that came out of nowhere, you know, with a really strong partner such as a client of Perkins. And then also what the early days look like and how they really, you know, found an interesting, you know, inflection point there when he came at the beginning with sales teams. But again, really interesting discussion, super inspiring journey. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Dan Lee. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alejandro. Super excited to be here.
So originally born and raised in New Jersey, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Yeah, for sure. I was actually born in Manhattan, grew up in New Jersey, and then came out to the Bay Area for school. But say growing up, my main hobbies and activities, one was ice hockey. So I grew up playing ice hockey since I was little. I still really enjoy ice skating, rollerblading, you name it. And another was kind of science and math and research. So I was always, you know, kind of doing extra science, extracurriculars. I remember one time in high school, I got in trouble for launching some sugar rockets that I had made and cooked up. But yeah, those were my main interests going, you know, growing up. And then ended up going to Stanford for college. That's where I met my co-founders, Rohan and Nikhil.
How do you get into computers and AI and machine learning and all of that jazz?
Yeah, at Stanford, it kind of just happens. Actually,
but was it before Stanford? Was it before Stanford? I mean,
no. So I, in high school, took an AP computer science class and I really disliked it, actually. And I was actually doing some physics research at Princeton Plasma Physics Lab in high school. And that piqued my interest in material science. So I thought I might do something around that longer term. When I went to Stanford and I started, I wasn't studying any computer science. I was thinking it might be either physics or math. But then all my smartest friends, you know, Rohan and Keel and you know, a bunch of others were studying computer science. And I was like, oh, I must be missing something. So I tried a couple computer science classes, really enjoyed it, and then kind of sprinted to catch up because I felt behind. And I think when you study computer science and you learn to build things, naturally you tend to want to go build things. So that definitely played a big role in starting Nux.
So let's talk about dropping out of Stanford. Because I know that I'm sure your parents were not happy about it.
So you see, I was fortunate in a sense. It was so I can explain the chronology. I was class of 21 at Stanford. I first stopped in 2019, actually. So I did a little bit over 2 years, and I started working at Scale AI on their machine learning team as like, you know, in during the school year internship where I stopped school and I was living and working in SF. And I had actually planned to study abroad at Oxford the following quarter after Scale, but the pandemic, you know, obviously that was canceled. Scale started working remotely, so I went back to New Jersey, and you know, then after wrapping that up, you know, the alternatives, one was remote classes, and the other is, you know, kind of just continuing working, hacking on things, and I was already a bit ahead, so the remote classes, based on what my friends were telling me, didn't sound super fun. So instead, I started hacking on Nux with this idea. How do you actually help make working slash, you know, studying remotely a much better experience? Kind of this concept of a virtual office.
So then let's talk about the, you know, because that's kind of like when you were at Scale AI, you know, obviously the whole thing, pandemic hit, you know, Nux, you know, is more like a side, you know, gig type of work. So how does the whole concept of maturing and graduating like a, you know, weekend project, you know, to really taking it seriously enough to say, hey, I think that this may be my next chapter and perhaps, you know, I give my notice and go all in?
Yeah, great question. It was definitely a gradual process. And I would say Nooks starting as a weekend project is maybe I was doing it full time, right? Not as like a school project, not, you know, but I was pretty interested. Like I got really into it. And I probably like the sequence of events that kind of led to more and more buy-in. First was deciding not to do my next summer internship that was lined up. And that wasn't a super hard decision. I was enjoying, you know, working on Nooks a lot. People were starting to use it. And I figured I'm going to learn a lot more doing this, you know, but at the time it was still a project. My parents were actually a little bit worried about that. And then the next probably big step was getting Rohan and Nikhil to join in. So, you know, we were all really close friends at Stanford. They were roommates. I was a quasi roommate. And in the early iterations of Nooks, I often showed them some of the prototypes. And I remember Rohan in particular was always like, hey, this sucks. Like, why don't you change it this way? Or, you know, make this improvement. And at some point I was just like, dude, like, just come help me build this. And that's how Rohan joined and Nikhil very shortly after. And then probably the last step in committing and really going all in and making this a company was over that summer, we had started getting a bunch of Stanford classes using Nooks and started, you know, basically gaining some traction and momentum. And that fall, some VCs started approaching us and saying, hey, you should actually think of this as a company and raise some money.
And we'll get into that in just a little bit. I want to ask you, what were the early days like? I mean, was there any ramen noodles in there or not?
Yeah. So started working just at home in New Jersey. We actually then moved to Rohan's basement in Virginia. So there were a couple of us in Rohan's family's home in Virginia. Rohan's mom was very nice enough to make us dinner often. So no actually ramen noodles, but definitely that vibe.
That's incredible. So I guess for the people that are listening to get it, what ended up being the business model of Nooks? How do you guys make money as well?
Yeah, great question. So really quickly, like background on Nooks or high level idea of like what Nooks is. We make sales teams more productive. So sales reps today spend a lot of time doing things like writing emails and making calls and doing research online. And AI is really good at doing these things. So our goal is, can you automate this busy work so that sales reps can focus on the more human parts of the job? And we have three kind of main AI assistants or products. And I can kind of explain how we monetize on each. We have a dialing assistant, which helps automate the manual parts of calling. So think like finding phone numbers, skipping answer machines and ringing, taking notes on calls. We have a coaching assistant that helps you basically identify areas to improve on calls. Basically, are people answering questions the right way? We have an AI role play part of that as well that simulates customers and a sales rep can practice trying to sell to it. And then the prospecting assistant is the third piece, which automates a lot of the rest of the manual work in doing account research, prioritizing lists of prospects, and actually drafting emails towards them. And the prospecting and coaching assistant, oh, sorry, the dialing and coaching assistant both charge on a per user basis. Like, so it's a per seat model. And the prospecting assistant is charged more on a usage-based model. And it's all, you know, kind of SaaS subscriptions.
So what was that moment like when you guys were like, I think that maybe we're into something with this?
Great question. So probably there were maybe two distinct phases of Nooks. In the early days, we were not focused on sales teams. We were interested in kind of more, I can share actually, I was interested in two problems getting started at Nooks. One was, hey, everyone's working remotely. Can you help them work as, you know, efficiently as they were in person with this like virtual office? Kind of like a Zoom, but for co-working instead of for meetings. And then the second problem I was interested in is, hey, if you get that virtual office working, you have a lot of data on how people work. And can you actually make it smart? So can you automate the manual parts of the job? Can you automate feedback loops to help people get better? And in that initial, you know, kind of first phase of Nooks, we spent a lot of time on that virtual office piece. And, you know, the initial traction, we had a lot of Stanford classes using Nooks for office hours during the pandemic. that, you know, that's kind of our initial set of users, and then started expanding to a bunch of startup teams, like sales, marketing, products, like varying, you know, types of startup teams. And then in the second phase of Nooks, that's when we started really making it smart and doubling down on sales teams, focus on, you know, not only how do we help them collaborate, but make them a lot more productive. And I'd say like the aha moment there is, you know, we get feedback, you know, all the time, even kind of since the early days, where people, sales reps and our users say, Nooks makes my job fun. People say, I would quit if we, you know, couldn't use Nooks, or I've gotten promoted because I'm able to learn and, you know, get better at my job via Nooks, or even I've made more money because I'm able to hit quota and be more productive because of Nooks. So I think that's been kind of this second aha moment where we've seen that Nooks is able to really deliver meaningful value to users.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So you were alluding to earlier, you know, how the whole fundraising journey, you know, started, and with the VCs, you know, giving you some thoughts and guidance. So I know that you guys have raised about $70 million. The last round was announced earlier this year, like a couple of months ago. But walk us through, what was that journey too of going through the financings?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, for context, this is my first company. I've been really fortunate to have a lot of help during, you know, learning the fundraising and company building process from really great advisors. And I'd say the first round that we did, that one, we were getting approached by VCs. Nooks was still a project at the time, right? And we were getting approached by VCs saying, hey, you should, you know, make this a company and think about scaling it. So really leaned heavily on advisors to evaluate, like, how do we think about it? Who should we talk to? And ended up raising our seed round kind of in late 2020, early 2021. And then since then, you know, our Series A and our recent Series B, each has been kind of kicked off by like a preemptive offer. And then we've, you know, kind of gone out and tested the market.
So talk to us about the whole process, like the expectations that you experience and how, you know, the whole interaction, you know, was changing with investors too as you were going from one financing cycle to the next. What you experienced at a seed stage, you know, was probably different, you know, than what you experienced at a Series A and the latest round. Also, so walk us through that too.
Yeah. So at the seed, you know, we had no deck. We had no company. We had a product, and we had a bunch of, you know, varied different groups giving great feedback on it. So the seed was, you know, the seed was probably less of like a typical structured funding round. And, you know, this was also our first time fundraising. So I think we're lucky, you know, at every round to have ended up with great investors who've then helped kind of with subsequent rounds. But yeah, that seed round was probably the most to navigate. And then at the Series A, that one was definitely different in the sense by that time, we had already started focusing on making sales teams more productive. We already had, you know, we had revenue, and starting at the Series A, they were actually, it was more metrics driven. It was more like, okay, what is the longer term vision? What is the market size, right? A lot like more of the fundamentals. And by the Series B, really, really much stronger emphasis on metrics, on growth and retention, and also, of course, on the TAM and our ability to go and capture it.
So this last one too, you know, where you got the round being presented and you got Kleiner Perkins coming in, what does it look like when a round is preempted? Because, I mean, most people that are listening, you know, to us now, they're probably thinking of the whole race of knocking doors. And how did it work differently this time around?
It's a good question. So one thing that we've done around and even in between rounds is leveraging investor connections to actually get intros to their portfolio companies. We sell to a lot of, you know, growth stage tech companies. And, you know, VCs often invest in a lot of these growth stage tech companies. So, you know, even outside of funding rounds, we've kind of kept in contact with investors to help, break into their portfolio companies. And at the most recent round, you know, one of these firms that we, you know, was helping us basically sent like a reverse pitch deck, and which indicated, hey, they're gearing up to make an offer. And, you know, it's important in fundraising. It's best because this is it's not a perfect market, right? Like there's not perfect visibility. So you actually want to go not make a decision based on one offer, but actually collect multiple data points to make a decision. So then we kicked off a bunch of other conversations with investors that we had been talking with.
So talk to us, I mean, because obviously investors and employees that you got there, and customers too, they're betting on a vision. No? So if you were to go to sleep tonight, Dan, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Nuxx is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'd like to give the analogy, you know, we're making sales reps more productive. I'd like to give the analogy of the transformation that farmers have seen over the past, you know, like a couple hundred years, especially with the Industrial Revolution. Farmers used to be plowing fields and more like manual labor. And now they have fleets of machines. They have drones, tractors, plows that do a lot of that manual work. And they are more like scientists today, where they can measure soil compositions and optimize yields. And there are a lot fewer farmers, actually, but there's a lot more food. And I think something similar is happening for sales reps. It's, you know, kind of an out there analogy, but especially for sales reps that are focused on generating opportunities, like sales development and business development reps, you spend the vast majority of your time on things now that AI can do, like writing emails and making calls and doing research online. AI is really good at, you know, writing an email or browsing the web and summarizing things. So as a result, the job is undergoing a very significant transformation. And in this world, you know, one rep will be able to do what used to take 10, and they'll be able to deliver a lot more value to customers and to more customers. So in this world, you know, I wake up one day and the vision is realized. Value creation will be a lot more efficient, right? Where you can do it with fewer people, reps will be able to focus on the more human parts of the job, and millions of people will have, you know, much, much better experiences in their day to day.
So how does, you know, this AI, you know, wave is everyone is talking about it, no? I mean, how are you guys unlocking it with Nuxx?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's really interesting how AI is being applied to different domains. I think one thing that is pretty evident in the market is, you know, AI intelligence has just reached levels that were previously, you know, thought it's going to happen in the next several decades, not years. And, you know, with foundation models pushing the boundaries of intelligence with LLMs, I think one, you know, pretty interesting thing is that the practical applications to solve real business problems remain underdeveloped, you know, compared to this intelligence. So, you know, I'm explaining I'm explaining this vision and this challenge with a, you know, 3 million inside sales reps in the US. Even without improving intelligence much, you can imagine that their jobs will be significantly transformed. So I think sales is interesting as compared to other domains that people are applying AI. For example, support, you know, customer support, or for coding, or for like legal or compliance. Because in a lot of these other domains, the end user or the consumer of the AI is a customer that's looking for help, right? Trying to answer a question. Or it's a lawyer who's trying to also, you know, answer a question and comprehend like some documents. In sales, you know, the consumer is a buyer that, you know, wasn't necessarily thinking of buying a product, right? You know, they have other responsibilities, but you know, this product can potentially add a lot of value to them. So in sales in particular, there's just this higher bar that you have to meet. You know, in a world where everything is AI and like a buyer's inbox is full of, you know, AI spam, then the thing that stands out really is being human. So I think we get to work on some really interesting problems that are not just, you know, kind of automating completely a job with AI, but actually really interesting and complex like human AI interactions. You know, what are the parts of the job that AI should do? What are the parts of the job that a human should do? Right? In sales, humans should focus on building customer relationships and in delivering value and empathizing with their problems and developing like creative strategies to solve them. So yeah, I think that's one interesting area that we get to think about in AI.
So we've been talking about the future here. I want to talk about the past, but doing so with a lens of reflection. No? So if I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back, you know, let's say to 2020, when you were starting to think about a world, you know, where you were going to do something on your own and become as an entrepreneur. And let's say you're able to go back in time and have a chat with that younger Dan. And you're able to give that younger Dan one piece of advice for launching a company. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Ruthless prioritization. This is, you know, becoming more and more common advice, but really have a small number of goals and stick to them. And, you know, this idea that you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And you need to pick really what you want to focus on and do. I think early on, we were not as you know, ruthless in terms of prioritizing. And over time, we've realized, hey, we want to do few things and few things very well. I think that advice I'd give to more entrepreneurs.
I love it. Dan, for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Dan, it has been an absolute honor to have you with us. Thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.